Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Oh boy, here we go again. Hi, it's John Williams. The Mincing Rascals had at it again this week. The biggest news of the week, your president and House Speaker aren't speaking. We talked about why this is more than their usual bickering. And then we bickered ourselves about Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot's inaugural address. What should two Chicago area high schools do about possibly racist gestures in their yearbooks? And at the end, our last 30 seconds of whatever doing at the end of these podcasts these days, we include my review of Joe Madden's new restaurant at Wrigley Field. We know you got a lot of options. Thank you for sharing your valuable time with us. And please tell your friends about us, too, as the Rascals now mince. Today is Thursday, May 23rd, 2019, at a very early 11:12 in the morning. Hi, this is John Williams, and you're listening to the Mincing Rascals. We picked up two more minutes than we normally have. It's a podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio here in Chicago. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
Hi, I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., unless there's a sporting event, in which case I'm on after.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the very, very, very strange columnist from the Tribune.
Nancy. Yeah, like, can I just call you Nancy?
Call me Nancy.
Wednesday, okay, we'll start with Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump, but what was the very, very, very strange thing?
Well, this is how Nancy Pelosi described her meeting with Donald Trump yesterday, where he walked into the room and didn't shake anybody's hand and announced that he wasn't going to do any deals with them at all about infrastructure until they stopped investigating him.
We thought we had some level of agreement, but you never know with this president of the United States. So that's what happened this morning. It was very, very very strange.
Is this just another in a series of, oh, Trump's crazy news today, or did this really have some significance? What happened?
Well, so Pelosi's under pressure from her caucus. They want impeachment. She had this meeting on the Capitol with them trying to appease them a little bit, and she came out and talked a little tougher than she has. She said that Trump has been engaged in a cover-up. The president apparently was watching that on Fox News or was told about it. And then when Schumer and Pelosi went down to the Capitol to meet on infrastructure, he was ready for them. And that's when he barged out, and they called reporters to it. They think they referred to it as a flash briefing or something like that.
I just saw that Nancy Pelosi, just before our meeting, made a statement that we believe that the president of the United States is engaged in a cover up. Well, it turns out I'm the most and I think most of you would agree to this. I'm the most transparent president probably in the history of this country. On a witch hunt, on a hoax, the whole thing with Russia was a hoax.
Now, ABC was reporting that his senior aides were saying, don't do this. Don't walk out there. But then others were saying that he had planned to do it for some time.
Well, when you saw him stand before the microphones at which he gave this flash briefing, there were signs pre-printed on his podium that said, no collusion, no
obstruction.
Obstruction.
He just took those down from the ceiling in his room.
So maybe those were everywhere. They were so, you know, you just think that somebody, when he says, let's do that, would say, that's beneath the office, and they just don't do it. But it seems like his every whim becomes what happens at that White House.
It's completely possible for the Democrats and Republicans to do legislation, to do an infrastructure package if they want to, while on another track an impeachment proceeding is going on, or other investigative procedures are going on. There's nothing about this that's particularly difficult or time-consuming that you right. could do this. What this tells me is that Trump wants to talk about infrastructure, but he doesn't want to pay for it, and he doesn't know what his deal would be. He doesn't have an offer on the table. He doesn't have a clue how to fund this without offending his Republican base. So this is his way of not doing infrastructure while still trying to convince the credulous people that follow him that he's actually interested in doing infrastructure.
To that point, back to Nancy Pelosi and the news conference she had after the White House meeting, when she said it was very, 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 very weird. She also said, I'm sorry. She said, maybe he's just too insecure to come up with a plan, which is, again, tweaking him, you know, playing with him. But the idea that he doesn't have the political fortitude to actually pay for this plan.
I did think the language she used prior to the meeting, though, was she ratcheted it up. She said she's consistently saying we're not there yet, we're not up to impeachment. But if she said, and she did say, he's obstructed justice, that's impeachable, dude. That is that we're there. So why doesn't she just pull the trigger?
How many federal former federal prosecutors have signed that letter now saying that the defense
was
out?
I think it was all of them.
It's somewhere. It's in the neighborhood of 1,000 former federal prosecutors have signed this letter saying that the evidence laid out in the Mueller report justifies an indictment for anybody else except the president of the United States.
But essentially saying that every single one of them with the evidence presented, they would all prosecute based on that.
He absolutely has committed impeachable offenses, and he absolutely should be. This is where the Democrats are in a trick. They're caught because is a impeachment good for Donald Trump? I'd say absolutely. I think it's better for Trump than it is for the Democrats. But if the Democrats are going to sit there and say that Trump needs to uphold his oath of office, then so do they. And if they're going to do that, they have to impeach him.
Yeah. Well, part of their responsibility.
I think if she believes that the obstruction occurred, then that's impeachable by any standard, by any reasonable standard.
Right.
I thought that one of you would say, and I don't think I've heard this yet, that the reason that the president said, I'm not going to play ball with you guys, is because there really is something that those investigations are going to reveal. So this is a stall tactic on
this.
Well, the investigations already revealed plenty in indictments.
And we're also getting closer to the IRS having to hand over his tax returns. I suspect there's going to be chicanery involved in the numbers.
But in the meantime, among other things, $2 trillion infrastructure bill doesn't go forward then, right? I mean, no work happens
That? Which is generally a bipartisan kind of an issue, too.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Democrats and Republicans love to cut ribbons in their districts, and they need to. Man, you got to drive around Chicago in those potholes we've got. You know, everywhere around the country, bridges, roads, rail, all these things need work, and we need to pay for it, and that's where Trump comes up short.
Well, maybe the president's trying to figure out ways to not pay for stuff in Chicago or all the Democratic cities.
He is very particular about that, isn't he? There was also two things Nancy Pelosi said, which are just so Nancy Pelosi, I think. She said she's praying for the president, and she thinks the family should do an intervention. Oh, please. I don't believe that for 2 seconds.
He's not up to the job. He's not able to do the job. He is an embarrassment to the country, and it's so disheartening.
The economy and jobs, and it's all going so well.
The economy's doing very well.
It is. And the other thing is I was out and traveling recently and running into Trump supporters, and they are doubling down.
Yep.
They are more virulent.
Because jobs and the economy.
Not just that, but they also feel that by attacking him, you're attacking them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
And my point is not the economy's doing well. He might be hurting himself with tariffs, we'll see, but my point is his personal behavior is not to the level.
Well, why did you just say that you think an impeachment is better for Donald Trump?
Because I think it speaks to those people who are doubling down.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who think he should be impeached are already there, and no one's going to change their mind.
And the people I'm talking to are it's a 35%. It's law, and they're going to vote in 2020. Now, if the Democrats are stupid, and they tend to be.
Wow.
No, especially on who they nominate.
Wouldn't deny it.
This is a tricky situation.
We're looking at 2004 again.
Look, there
Democrats.
Are stupid people on both sides, Scott.
Some are good, I hear.
You're on a roll, lady.
But my point is that if they go with Biden, massive mistake.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I'm not sure about that. I have a lot of problems with Biden and his record in his record, but I also realize that he is probably a lock to win Pennsylvania, which is key to the electoral strategy of the Democrats
in
2020. He's probably going to do better in Wisconsin than Hillary Clinton. I don't think the Democrats are going to make the same mistakes that they made in 2016. But you're going to, if you nominate Joe Biden, you're going to discourage and depress the turnout among young voters. They don't tend to vote that much anyway. The boomers vote, and the boomers will have some nostalgia for Obama. And they so if you're talking about pure, raw political possibility, Biden might still be your best bet.
I don't know. I think that it's some of his popularity. I think the kids liked his memes, but I also think that this is a way you get some of the moderates. You know, you get an older white guy who they're comfortable with. I think you get a lot of the middle ground.
I think the danger for the Democrats in 2020 is the same they had in 2016, in that 5 million fewer Democrats voted in 2016 than in 2012. 2012, you had a sitting president. So it didn't energize the young voters. Biden will not energize them. And hate is not a strong enough reason to go out and vote.
I think that if it, look, I'm not a big big fan of Biden being at the top of the ticket, but let's say he is, I think that you also can strengthen that by, if you pick a Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Peach. I mean, I think that you can energize the younger voters.
I think he's a perfect antidote to Donald Trump's demeanor. I mean, he's old, but he's the, hey, come on, fellas, let's get together, let's do this. And he is the perfect, if you're voting against Trump's behavior, I think Biden fits that very nicely.
Yeah, he's got this bipartisan fantasy that he keeps harkening back to, like, oh, we can all get along and work together across the aisle. Since when? I mean, well, it's been a long time since Republicans and Democrats worked together. We're very polarized, and I'm not sure that good old Uncle Joe can make
so
that
So you think
change.
Somebody should run harder the other way?
Do I think they should? I know they are.
You think that's a winning strategy?
No, I don't. I mean, this is why I'm very ambivalent about the whole Biden candidacy, which is I feel like he might be the best guy. On the other hand, I have to say that in 2016, I thought that Hillary Clinton was the best person because I thought she was going to be the one who was going to appeal.
She got the most votes.
She did get the most votes, but she didn't get them in the right places.
Oh, but so. Patty, do you think that the Democrats should pursue impeachment because the evidence is there and it's their constitutional obligation?
I do.
Or do you think they should do it because that's politically a good idea?
Well, I think that they don't do it because it's politically a bad idea. I think that's what they're afraid of, at least. And I mean, when the Republicans did it to Bill Clinton, you know, what was the fallout for Republicans?
But this
that?
Is my question for all of you. Since impeachment is inherently a political process,
right,
what would your advice to Democrats be right now? What would you tell Nancy Pelosi to do?
I think that they've messed it up so much, messed up the messaging. It's hard and even to make a choice to do it now, to do it later. I think that they're caught already. I think that it should have been started. They should have committed to it. If that was the evidence that they had, they should have committed to it from the beginning.
Listen to all of you not jumping in here.
I'm jumping in. I'll jump in.
You directed the question at me. They were waiting
I will
for
associate
the
myself with the first part of Patty's remarks. I don't think, I'm not persuaded, as Steve is, and I think Patty is, that it's a bad idea politically. I think that when you look at, first of all, the Republicans did not pay a particularly heavy price for impeaching Bill Clinton for lying about sex.
Right. That's true.
This is a much more serious, much more involved bill of particulars against Trump. And I think that if they are to make that case through hearings and evidence that Trump can bellyache all he wants about being persecuted and that they came up with nothing, but they Mueller did come up. He came up with a lot of evidence, at least 10 instances.
Tell me the thing the Senate would discover that they would convict him on.
The Senate's not going to convict him for
sure. Okay, so this is all really pointless.
Theatrics.
Yes.
It's all theatrics, but that's what politics is. Okay. This is what Trump did yesterday. It's political theater.
I think that's why that's why Pelosi wants to have the hearings without the name. That's why she wants to have the Judiciary Committee hear from all these people, get this stuff out in the public without having to call it an impeachment.
And by the way, Mueller looks like he's going to be a real disappointment. He's refusing to do
it. He has not made a public statement in 2 years.
What is with this guy? Everyone thinks that he's like Mr. Propriety, Mr. Mm-hmm. Rectitude. He's going and he's running away and hiding.
We all write the stories the way we want to be written about these people. Everyone thought Rod Rosenstein was this, you know, genius and this hero until he wasn't, didn't go our way. And now all of a sudden he's a Nimrod. You know, we all have created Robert Mueller, and if Mueller doesn't behave the way we created him,
what's with this mysticism? He's like some monk on a hill that we have to climb to and ask him to divine from this document the meaning and the crime of it. Why doesn't he just frickin' say something?
I do believe that he did a great job on this report. I think he handled his team brilliantly. There were very few leaks, and he did what he was told to do. It didn't expand into any other areas that weren't his purview, as the original purview.
450 pages.
He didn't end up looking into Whitewater, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's what I would have done. He should have written 150 pages. He should have written a 75, a 50. It's getting shorter, isn't it? He should have written something longer than 4 pages and shorter than 400 pages that people would have read. A lot of the members of Congress, if you believe at least Lauren Underwood and some of the others, the Republican from Michigan, who said that he doesn't think most of the Republicans have read this document. They should have given everybody something more digestible and more concrete, more specific.
Definitive.
More definitive. Less evidence, evidence.
Mueller should have given them a briefing like the president gets his intelligence briefing with slides and pictures?
Here's why they want Mueller to testify. They want the train. They don't. I think they actually don't care at this point whether Mueller says anything new. If they just get him on television up there, sort of rehashing what his report says, that goes a little bit deeper than the news stories that we've seen. If you got him on camera for 3, 4, 5 hours,
you had Don McGahn saying what he's quoted as saying in the report, right?
I don't think they need to break any new ground to get people to pay more attention to this thing. I think that's what it's all about. But Mueller, Mueller was never the savior, the saint that we thought that he was. He just didn't say anything. And I think one question I would have for him, I really want to know why he didn't try to subpoena the president to make him testify. They made Bill Clinton testify. Clinton had to testify in the middle of his presidency about his sexual relations with an intern. And the Supreme Court backed up that subpena. So why didn't Mueller push
What's your answer to that?
I think he's a coward.
Ooh.
I mean, what's the explanation? The explanation we heard was, this would have made this would have been litigation. It would have made the investigation drag on.
And the president,
Benghazi investigation dragged on far longer than this one did.
And the other thing was that he wanted to give the president an opportunity to defend himself, and because he wouldn't be going to court in order to state his case.
And he also didn't want. Now he says the reporting is he doesn't want to seem political. And I think by not saying anything, it is playing politically.
He has a duty to. He has a duty to answer the questions from the Congress.
I want to talk about the mayor of Chicago. We've got a new one now. Officially, Lori Lightfoot's inaugural speech this week with the entire city council, the governor, both U.S. senators in attendance, was almost like a campaign speech. She outlined her objectives, including ending aldermanic privilege and limiting outside income for council members. She drew laughs at the notion that Chicago politicians could be ethical, and then she turned and criticized the ethics and practices of the council and the mayor as they were standing there. She even did a shout out to Alabama and Georgia's abortion laws. Now, what did you all think
against, of Lori's? Against their laws. I actually texted to your show because you were asking if it was appropriate for her to make any statements about abortion, and I think absolutely, as the leader of one of the greatest cities in the world, I think that that made sense to me.
What?
Are we going to do this again?
Yeah. What? I'm just saying.
I think the point I made in that conversation had nothing to do with whether it was appropriate. Absolutely not.
Right.
All I said was that it didn't fit with the rest of her speech. The rest of her speech was very city-driven, and that just didn't fit. But I support
what she said. I think it was more John that had asked on his show.
I'm just taking the bullet for him.
I didn't.
Well, you're the one that said it's like a statue in a painting museum.
See how I defended him, and he comes
you
at me.
You felt it was a non sequitur.
I did.
Did you see my I don't know if Aleph saw my text, but I was like, absolutely. I was texting, and I'm like,
you should have called.
It was you were at the end of it.
I didn't disagree with anything that she said. I just said it was a little incongruous.
Well, I took a lot of grief for my position on that, which I think was like yours. I don't think it's inappropriate for her to say those things. I thought it was an odd place or time for her to say
it. It was very interesting when she said it, though. If you remember, it was right after she had called out the city council and said, and it was this like broadside against council and corruption.
Huge applause.
Huge applause.
That means restoring trust in our city's government and finally bringing some real integrity to the way this city works. When public officials cut shady backroom deals, they get rich and the rest of us get the bill.
And the councilmen are sitting there going, ugh. And then she pivots to national abortion law, which everybody has to, you know.
She says, I've got Georgia on my mind, which is a turn of a phrase, and then Alabama, too, and then she made her point.
We must stand with women all across our country who fear for their basic rights and feel powerless in the face of hateful legislation designed to control our bodies and our choices.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
I totally didn't see it coming. I'd say I didn't really take that much note of it. By the end of the speech, I was thinking about a lot of other things, but not that. But
look, a lot of us had it on our mind, and if it includes a commitment, the state of Illinois still does better when it comes to infant mortality and maternal mortality, whereas Georgia is the fourth worst and Alabama is the second worst in the country. I think that there's something to be said about women's health in the state of Illinois, and she made a statement about it.
Maybe a more pressing local issue would have been ending aldermanic privilege, limiting outside income for members of the city council. And that's what the crowd was. I don't know who those people were, because I was under the impression they were there to support everybody, most of whom were aldermen and women on the stage. But they were just eating that up. At one point, there was 40 seconds of sustained applause and cheering for that kind of language.
Aldermanic privilege is, as I understand it, mostly a gentleman's agreement or gentlewoman's agreement, right? How does?
Yes, no, it's not formally.
So how? What does she do to end it? I don't quite get it.
Executive order.
The executive order requires the departments that are charged with issuing these permits and so on to report the involvement of the aldermen, so that we can review this and we can try to check the idea that someone, and that, you know, it is to me absurd if someone wants to put in an awning or a curb cut that the alderman gets to sign off on that one way or the other, it has a dispositive view on that. I get it when there's a big zoning issue that the alderman feels like this is important to his ward. I get that. But the fact is that we've seen it, and we see it in the Burke case, where allegedly, you know, some guy wanted a curb cut for his Burger King restaurant, and Burke puts the screws on him for donations. And you can't have that.
Let me get this straight. This isn't codified, then.
There's no language that says that these people have ultimate veto.
It's tradition.
But it's a tradition, and the council knows how you feel about that issue, and they'll vote accordingly.
And we'll never know the thousands and millions of deals that have been cut that either hurt or help our neighborhoods throughout the history of this sort of practice.
Well, that's why. So we had one of the aldermen after our show. It was Alderman LF. Was it Lopez? Who was the Sanchez? What was his name? Ray Lopez.
15th
As someone who's been called, your name's Sanchez arts. Or whatever, right? Just kidding.
Vasquez.
Exactly.
Edit, please edit.
So, and he was ticked. He walked into the studio with a long face.
He's personally insulted because he said,
I'm not doing that stuff.
We could have had more of a celebratory tone as opposed to a confrontational, everyone standing behind me is corrupt and I'm defending you against them and their evil mechanisms.
Then what does he have to worry about?
Because she was taking on the city council and all, because she was taking on all aldermen.
How can you deny that?
His kind of point was that all aldermen are not like that.
Many of them have been indicted in the last four years. I mean, come on. I think to observe that corruption has been a really big problem for the Chicago City Council is not breaking new ground. And for him to be insulted by this.
What did we just hit? 30 aldermen have gone to jail now?
Oh, my God.
That's what he said. He told us, he said,
you know, 30 of my predecessors, aldermen, have gone to jail for various things, including abuse of that, but how many more have not gone to jail?
Somebody texted in right afterwards, and I brought it back to him, and I said, that can't be your defense. And then he kind of wiggled around it.
Yeah, I thought he was a sincere guy. I was hurt by her blanket accusation, and, you know, it's not an unfair point.
If you're on the up and up, I don't think you have anything to fear.
Don't you get the feeling everybody better put on their big boy pants when it comes to Lori Lightfoot? I mean, yesterday she said the FOP, she's not going to respond every time they complain, and she said it seems like it's every day. She's not holding back on anybody.
And she's also not going to use the police for her security details. She's hiring a private firm that's politically connected. So.
Yeah, that gets to be, that's a day or two after her inaugural address. Well, she said she was going to get rid of connection and corruption and she hires.
The optics on that were bad, but I think she's entitled to whatever protection she wants.
Her personal security. Yeah, I think. And she was very honest about that. It's for her wife, her family.
But
she gets to choose.
Well, right. But who's paying for it?
That is not known.
I have no idea.
If she's paying for it, she gets to choose. If we're paying for it,
it should be the police.
Well, or then there's just we should get
or
a more full, or we should get a more full explanation is all. Maybe that's the right way to go.
Yeah,
right.
But
that's
the aldermen say, okay, but if your plan now is to effect change, it's a new day with Lori Lightfoot, you are going to need the city council. Is a speech like that, embarrassing these guys in front of everybody on their swearing in, the best way to effect change?
You make a really good point, because this was a problem that Governor Rauner had, was that he would say one thing and attack everybody and behind closed doors say one thing and then come out in a press conference and totally slam all the people he just had conversations with. So
Eric, when I listened to the inauguration and her taking on the city council, I started wondering what kind of relationship they would have, and I started thinking of the Verdoli Act 29 and all of that stuff. I mean, I don't see us headed in that direction, right? Because the old guard, there's not so much of the old guard around.
I don't see us headed in that direction. I think that there's a belief among the members of the council that she is going to get the votes that she needs for her reorganization plan for the council. She's going to get Scott Wagaspak in as the finance chair, which is the big one. And so I think that's going to happen. I don't think you're going to have those kind of battles, but I think you are going to see more fighting on the council. It's going to be a more contentious place, and I think that's good.
Maybe that's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing to have different points of view being aired and arguments being had on the floor that are meaningful, rather than the rubber stamp council and the extremely powerful mayor we've had forever now.
Can I ask this? I mean, she comes in with 75% of the vote. I have never experienced.
That's nearly a mandate.
Yeah, you think? I mean, is this? Can she carry that forward and use it to muscle this council?
I don't know that she has the connections that she needs to do to make that all work. I mean, you need to. It's not just a mandate you need, but you need to have the people around you who can help you affect your policies.
A certain amount of finesse too, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see her first. As you say, our first 100 days is going to be really interesting to see what kind of when we're reconvening here in a couple of weeks, we can see how's it going with the council, because that first meeting is a week from Wednesday.
She's in a position to transform the city, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, she could be a transformative leader. Yeah. We don't know.
It could be. And this is, I made this point, I think, last week, where I talked about when we evaluate Rahm Emanuel's term, it's going to be in some ways based on how effective Lori Lightfoot has been in dealing with a lot of the problems that people point to. Is like, you didn't deal with the neighborhoods, you didn't deal with the schools in the way that we wanted. Okay, we're going to see if someone who has Lightfoot's mandate and her credentials and so on can make the changes that Emanuel didn't make, or if it's a hard job.
Or if it's just a regular complaint.
By the way, do we still refer to Rahm? And we called The Atlantic the other day because he's now a journalist, he's a columnist. His piece in The Atlantic was about the problem with the
elites,
privileged elites, which that's exactly what I said.
Well, he'd written about a dozen pieces for them before. That was the first one as former mayor.
As a former mayor. So when we called, we asked for Mayor Emanuel or Rahm Emanuel. You usually retain the highest office.
Yes.
I presume even at the mayoral level, right?
Yes. They always retain the title, yeah.
You still call him governor. That's true.
Someone on our staff, I can't remember who it was now, tweeted out, said, I hope that when Emanuel, as now he's a journalist, when he calls people for quotes, they write back and say, I'd like those questions in writing, please.
File FOIA.
Right. By the way, does anybody care, and by care, I mean just, are you interested in how Lori Lightfoot presents herself, how she is without a smile, how she's very dour, how she wears kind of frumpy suits, how she just, I'm talking about the appearance of a female Patty Vasquez, but I would be saying this about a newly elected mayor who had such an uninviting facade.
I was going to say, she just always seems very serious, and her moments of levity are specific, it feels like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know. We don't have to talk about it, because I don't mean this gender specifically, but I mean, she does have a very specific look and appearance, and it's not, to me, very friendly. And now we're all just getting acquainted with this new person. We didn't know who she was 9 months ago. A year ago, picked the spot where you decided she was a contender. And so I'm just learning to read her, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, congratulations at trying to thread that needle and not making it
How
about...
How did I do?
I think if the listeners listened to you sincerely, they would have understood that. But that doesn't always happen.
And that's hard to do.
But I'll edit that out.
But no, leave it in. I think you should. But here's the thing about her is, and we talked about it with policy and experience, but it's also physically. She's not like anything we've ever seen before.
I agreed.
She's not a buttoned down or brushed up politician. She's something wholly new. And that also has to do with her appearance and her demeanor.
The very first thing she said, I'll let you go, Patty, was she said she called out her ethnicity, her orientation. You know, she embraced it. She threw it right out there. Go ahead.
So I could go after you for the, tell a woman to smile some more. And I get that that's going to be some of the reaction. But what I think we're also talking about is that she's just being very natural. And that's what I think is the most bizarre for us to take in. She is herself. She doesn't try to be anybody else.
And with Rahm, don't forget, as a cartoonist, Rahm, I didn't want him to smile because it always scared me when he did, because it was sort of like the hitman just before he pulls the trigger, right? He goes, hey, don't do this. You don't need to do this. And then he smiles and pulls it.
That's because his top lip kind of curls. Anyway.
Sort of like a Grinch.
It kind of does this thing, right? Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing. We do, and obviously this is your job, is to go by the physical attributes. I think that we have talked about Rahm Emanuel and his height and how he looks dour and his attitude is, we mentioned about he's cusses at people in meetings and things like that.
And Quinn was frumpy and looked like a big pile of jello.
Okay, let's not continue on the road of people we don't like.
Yeah, but he tried. At least he tried.
So how are you going to, what's your caricature of Lori Lightfoot?
She has Rahm eyes. So I start with
that. She kind of does.
She has the smoky eyes that you could just swimming. she has a fairly square face. She does have, I always see her, I don't know why I always draw her with a little wry grin on her face.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing when John and they're talking about her demeanor. I think there is a smile there. I just think it's not a tradition. I mean, I think she does have a good humor.
This is kind of a side note. I just want everyone to take in the moment, the fact that Scott Stantis's cartoon of her pulling the plug on the machine is framed and on her shelf in her office.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's an honor. Because Rom never had any of my stuff.
I would say she is a serious person, and she's not a particularly charismatic person as far as politicians go. There are politicians who come into like the editorial board area, and they've just got this. They want to connect with people. They're I say Bruce Rauner was fairly charismatic, certainly in person. I think Mayor Emanuel in person was also had that ability to connect and. This is not Lori Lightfoot's background. She's never been a politician before this. I don't really care. I'm not going to have dinner with her necessarily. I want her to run the city. So, you know, if she wears frumpy suits or whatever, I don't care about that.
And when I had the opportunity, I was a moderator for one of the mayoral forums, and there was a long table. There were 11 candidates. She was towards the end, and it's a lot of wrangling trying to get. And I will say she cut through a lot of the clutter, and that's saying a lot for considering who was on that stage.
The other thing is I think she made a point in her speech that all three citywide elected officials now are women of color, mm-hmm. right? You throw in the Cook County State's Attorney, Kim Fox, an African-American woman, Tony Preckwinkle, African-American woman. I was talking with a buddy of mine at a bar this week about that. And the nice thing about that is, and you guys tell me, it seems like race was an issue in none of their elections. I mean, we're here in this position and none of them was... the black vote or the brown vote.
Or gender.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like maybe we got here in a responsible way.
Yeah, I have no qualm with that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I grew up in Norwood Park, which is a heavily white, blue collar, a lot of cops and firefighters. And to see the numbers that turned out for both of them, for Preckwinkle, mostly for Lightfoot, I was really proud of my side of the city.
I want to give you guys a quote. If you tell a big enough lie and you tell it often enough, it will be believed, or something like that. There's various versions of it. That line accompanied a senior photo in the Highland Park High School yearbook, as it is often attributed to Joseph Goebbels, the propaganda minister for Adolf Hitler. The school has decided not to distribute the yearbooks, and Oak Park having found over a dozen instances of students flashing that upside-down OK sign has halted distribution of their yearbook. They're going to republish it at a cost of $50,000 to the school. Are the schools making the right decisions on these things?
It's Highland Park. There's a lot of even family members of survivors of the Holocaust. I would imagine that it would be very important to them to have that removed.
But I'd love to see, and I haven't seen too much. My kids went to the same high school district as Highland Park High School. So I certainly get the sensitivity of the population where I live. I'd like to see some. I'd like to know what the kid meant when he put it in, because it's a common phrase,
right?
It's a phrase that
we
there
asked
are a lot
the school
of people.
And they didn't respond.
Yeah, there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle who have used that phrase, particularly in these times.
It's a very timely quote, no matter who said it, no matter what its origins is, and I can't imagine. Well, I can't imagine, I suppose, but my guess is that the student he or she attributed it to Anonymous. May not have known
probably
this,
but was
using it as a commentary on today's political situation and was not doing a quiet shout-out to the Nazis. And I think that that intent matters. And I think that to react with this kind of, I would say, oversensitivity to something that is what Goebbels said, what is said in that quote is manifestly true, and it is very true today, that we are seeing big lies coming out of this administration all the time. I believe that's what this student was getting at, and so to assume, and I'll go to the Oak Park situation. Apparently, there were a bunch of kids of various genders and races who were flashing this upside down OK symbol in photos for the yearbook, and this was evidently part of the circle game, which is this incredibly stupid juvenile game where you're supposed to have people look at your little symbol you're flashing with your hand, and you get to punch them in the arm. I don't, and because the white supremacists have co-opted this, they're going to spend $50,000 they could have spent on arts programming or tutoring or anything that would be of value to that school community. That seems insane to me.
I would also jump in and throw in, you know, history, that Harry Truman used the quote extensively in the 1948 election to describe Republicans. So the, you know, it's something that's become part of the common vernacular.
You know, what if they had just let it go out, acknowledged it, put it out, it would have been over by now? And I bring that up because I heard this morning of polling, you know, there was a study yesterday of the governors at Northam in Virginia, the guy who was or was not in blackface. And the study said they couldn't tell if it was him in this picture. He's weathered that storm. I heard a reporter today talk about polling of Democrats in Virginia. And Northam does better among black Democrats today than he does among white Democrats.
Wow.
He weathered it because the reporter said the African Americans are more pragmatic, they're older, and you know, they see what he's doing now, not what he did then. So what if they had just released the yearbook and weathered the 2 weeks?
And I'm guessing that the black voters in Georgia have experienced worse. Is it Virginia? I'm sorry, Virginia.
Well, they said that was one of the reporters much said worse. That he's been through much worse than this. Yeah.
Well, but the voters have. I mean,
right.
The community has.
Well, the other thing that comes up in my mind is it? Does it really matter what's in a year? Does the yearbook speak for the entire community? Is the quote underneath somebody's picture speak for the entire community, especially when it's ambiguous like that?
Put out by the school. It's put up with a faculty supervisor. I got an email yesterday or a text message into the show from somebody who is the faculty yearbook supervisor, and this person's, they've been doing it for 15 years, and they say every time the book comes out, I'm nervous that I missed something because it's the school's stamp on that. And I'm sure that at both of those schools, the principal's mad at whoever that faculty member is who was in charge of that.
I'm with Steve. I think that I would want to know what was in their mind. I mean, I would want to talk to them. Somebody would say something. Some kid knows whether or not it was intended to be racist.
Yeah, right. So we reached out to Highland Park High School and we said, we just want to know if you know what the intent was of the kid. And maybe it doesn't matter because my attitude about this has long been, going back to the Doug Glanville case at Wrigley Field, that it doesn't matter what the intent is of the guy flashing the symbol or issuing the quote. If it's received in a certain way, you need to appreciate that. So maybe it was an innocent mistake on this kid's part, but doggone it, at this very Jewish high school, we're not going to do that.
People, about the circle game, the people have said it's been going on for decades. So, well, then show me decades of pictures of people playing the circle game. Because if it's intended to punch the person that sees it, why would you put it in a picture? Because no one's going to get punched.
Not everyone is going to receive everything in the spirit that it's intended. How sensitive do you want to be? How accommodating to somebody's feelings do you have to be? If some kid in Highland Park thinks, I want to make this statement about today's political situation because I think that this administration is promulgating big lies, and then somebody up there or some group of people up there says, well, this reminds me of something that Goebbels said, and this is an endorsement of Nazis, do you necessarily buckle to that and suspend distribution of the yearbook? The other solution is, why don't they just take the yearbooks and get a Sharpie and X
go
out the
everyone.
Quote? It doesn't take that long. We had a situation in the Tribune many years ago where we actually had, there was an article about the C word that was in a special section. We had editors and reporters marching over to Freedom Center to pull that section out of the paper.
One by one.
It can be done. This idea of being a huge deal about it.
I guess the opposite of how sensitive do you want to be? I guess the question is how intolerant do you want to be of somebody's reaction to saying this is hurtful, I guess.
We are now going to go to the last part of the podcast, which used to be recommendations. Now we've switched it to 30 seconds of anything you want to say. We did that, and then my dog's veterinarian said, why don't you do the recommendations? I missed the recommendations. So I'm going to give you 30 seconds of a recommendation. Are you ready? I'm splitting the middle is what I'm telling you. Madden's is that new bar at Waveland and Clark at Wrigley Field. I was just there with Brenda the other night. Go upstairs if you want something a little less burger and beery in Wrigleyville. There's a bar, there's indoor and outdoor seating, but it's really nice. You'll face north of the field and west of the field, so while you're right there, it feels a little less Wrigley. It's also Italian and Polish cuisine. I had a thin crust pizza and a Manhattan, and both were very good.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Zorn, ready, set, go.
Well, to the many of you who use Gmail as either primary or secondary email accounts, I'm recommending Simplified Gmail. It's a new browser plugin made by Michael Leggett, who's Gmail's lead designer from 2008 to 2012. It's not a life-changing hack, but it's pleasant. Simplified tweaks the user interface to hide the logo and minimize those sidebars and menu items that usually clutter the screen. The appearance is cleaner and sleeker, and who doesn't like clean and sleek? Search for Simplified Gmail for instructions on how to install and use. It's free.
Will it get rid of all my emails that I've hoarded? I'm a digital hoarder.
No, but I can do that for you. How many do you have?
I would say in the shy of 100,000. Yeah, I would say that's not. I would not be.
You're a lady on a TV show now. You know that. You know, where they go in and they say, oh, my God, this is tragic. But it's digital.
I never want to be accused of getting rid of emails.
So are you ready to go?
Just in case. I am ready to go. Mine's a recommendation and something I want to share with you. If you garden, if you know someone that garden, I want to recommend the website seedballs.com. They are a division of Futures Unlimited. And they are these little balls that are filled with seeds, are packed with seeds, and they're made, they're hand-rolled by adults with disabilities. I had the wonderful opportunity of speaking with the organization yesterday, and I was inspired and awed by the work that they do and the passion that they have for the individuals that they work with. There are group homes, there are jobs, there are all kinds of wonderful activities that they have for kids, adults. In particular, I look forward to working with people like that when Declan gets older. It gave me a lot of hope for our future because if you don't know, my son is intellectually disabled, will never live independently. And when I meet folks like this, I know that after Steve and I are gone, that he will still be loved by people who are passionate about what they do.
Well put, Scott Stannis, go.
Ken Burns, in his documentary about the national parks, said that they're the best idea America ever had. I'm not sure, but I like the Constitution. I kind of like that.
That's up there.
And I like pizza.
Yeah, there's a few things I could tweet.
So there's things that may kind of top that list. But I just came back from a trip out west. We hiked a little bit in Zion, and then we hiked the Grand Canyon from rim to rim in a day and succeeded. Amazingly, and it is still the most stunning, beautiful thing you will ever see. It will never disappoint, so go to a national park.
The guidebooks are filled with warnings. Do not hike rim to rim, especially when you're an old man like Scott Stannis.
Yeah, well, no.
Yeah, I did it.
I did it. Ta-da.
Thank you,
ta-da.
Scott Stannis. Thank you for that warning, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Patty.
Behind the curtain, by the way, I moved over here so I could see when people were going to talk. I can't see everybody.
I wondered why you moved around in our little studio.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, producer L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams. We will drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.